We might finish the introductory part, rather the prologue, and then we'll begin the first story, maybe tomorrow. Now again, I want to remind you about your essay. Yesterday, only one or two of you had picked a verse. Anybody else picked a verse yet? One, two, three. Madhavendrapur has already written his. And anyway, I just want to encourage you not to leave it for the last minute. Yesterday we heard about three different fish in the pond, remember? And that pond, there was three fish, and one fish, he anticipated problems and took action before they arrived. And he saved himself. The second fish, as soon as the problem was upon him, then he did something. But he still had to undergo some difficulty. And the third fish thought, well, if I write something, if I don't write something, you know, it's all in my karma. So whatever happens, happens. I'll just accept. So, and the third fish, what happened to him is he got eaten. So we don't want to be like that third fish. We should anticipate. And this is not a problem, of course. This actually gives you a chance to assimilate what you've heard and try and use it in your preaching. And of course, I always like to give exams or so-called exams. This is my tendency is to always, during the time you're supposed to give an exam, I always like to put the students to work in such a way that it's productive for me also. So I'm sure I'll get some nice ideas from your essays, which can be incorporated in this seminar. Well, text 38. A man may be handsome, young, and born in a famous dynasty, but if he is not educated, he is useless, just like a kimsuka flower, which looks beautiful but has no fragrance. So these kimsuka flowers are red and they grow in big trees. They're also called palas flowers. And though they look very beautiful, they have no fragrance. Thus they are not offered to the Lord or used for any other purpose. Similarly, if someone is young and beautiful but lacks proper education, he is useless and may only cause disturbance to others. An object has importance because of its good qualities. Well, this is straightforward. So again, emphasizing education is something that complements our, if we have good birth, if we have good looks, that these are external things which are not, we should not judge things by externals. This is one of the main themes that comes throughout this work. We have to learn how to not judge things by the external symptoms, but go beyond and examine the real essence of a thing. So similarly, a person may be born in a good family, he may be very handsome, or a woman may be very beautiful, but if they're not cultured, if they're not educated, then these things, these external things actually don't have much importance. So text 39. Just as an illegitimate child is not respected in society, so a man who has not studied books from it, or is not studied from a teacher, is not respected by others. So knowledge comes from books and must be studied under a bona fide teacher. A person who has no teacher cannot get proper understanding. He will either have no knowledge or his understanding will be improper or incomplete. And thus he is compared here to an illegitimate child. An illegitimate son is unfit for religious functions within the Varnashram system and is not respected by learned people. Similarly, knowledge acquired without a guru is not respected by gentle pandits. Previously, it was a custom that only those who have studied under a bona fide teacher could enter into an assembly of learned scholars. Just as nowadays, if one lacks academic credentials, his competence is questioned. Vedic literatures lay great stress on acquiring knowledge from a bona fide guru. Now, there's a story in Mahabharata which illustrates this. There was a Brahmana named Devadatta who neglected to study during his youth. When he grew and realized the importance of being educated, he decided to acquire knowledge. But out of pride, he did not approach a teacher. That often happens. We've seen even in Gurukul, when boys are young, say before they're 11, 12 years old, They have naturally a nice service attitude. Even when they're 8, 9 years old, they have a very nice service attitude. But as they get older, especially as they reach puberty, then they become less and less submissive. And of course, Chanakya Pandit says they must be dealt with a different attitude. But it's seen that as one gets older, then it's more difficult for him to be submissive and humble. Unless, of course, he's very learned. And if he's very learned, then of course, one who's very learned then will be submissive and humble to the spiritual master. But here, of course, this particular brahmana, this Devadatta, of course, he did not study in his youth. And so now, when he realized the importance of study as he was older, he because of pride, he was too proud to actually go and approach a teacher. So he resolved that he would acquire knowledge by performing tapasya. And he had heard a verse which says, tapasa kim nasidyate. It means everything can be acquired simply by performing penance. So then he went to the forest to perform austerities. Lord Indra advised him that if he wanted to acquire knowledge, he should study under a teacher. But proud Devadatta paid no heed to Indra's good counsel. Indra appeared to him there in the forest. One day, when Devadatta went to the bank of the river, he noticed an old brahmana sitting on the bank, pouring sand into the flowing river with his hands. Devadatta's curiosity was aroused, and when he asked the brahmana what he was doing, the latter answered that he was building a bridge over the river. He was getting sand from the bank, putting it into the flowing river, and like this he told him, I'm building a bridge to cross the river. So Devadatta had a hearty laugh and remarked, how foolish you are. How do you expect to build a bridge with sand? The water is just carrying the sand away. The brahmana, who was Lord Indra in disguise, replied, Devadatta, if you can acquire knowledge without approaching a teacher, I can surely build a bridge with sand. So he was comparing the two things, that it's useless to pour sand into the river and thinking you'll build a bridge with that. Similarly, it's foolish to think you will gain knowledge, acquire knowledge, without approaching a bona fide teacher. So then text number 40, yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
There's another verse here, but it's not a verse. There's some other information that was not put in the book. After thinking like this, the king called for an assembly of learned scholars and said, O learned men, please hear me. Is there any among you who can give second birth to my ill-behaved and illiterate sons by educating them in Niti Shastra? So now the king is appealing to all the scholars in his kingdom, asking someone to come forward and teach his sons. And then he says, because just as a piece of glass appears like an emerald when held near gold, so a fool acquires proficiency when in saintly association. So then there's some comment there. Marakata mani, or emerald, is green in color, but the finest are those tinged with yellow. When green glass is held next to gold, it reflects its color and appears like an emerald. Emeralds are very expensive gems, and glass has no value in comparison. Yet a piece of glass can reflect the characteristics of an emerald. Similarly, good association can make a fool expert. Glass does not permanently acquire the emerald's qualities, but a fool can actually become scholarly by associating with learned men. This is because man is conscious and can retain knowledge. The king desired a gem-like teacher for his sons, who were like worthless pieces of glass. So who can think from Srimad Bhagavatam an example of this principle of association? Yes, Janmasthami. Very good. Well, Parikshit was already pretty saintly. But Narada Muni is a very good example in that he actually didn't have a very good birth. It's not even said who his father was. He was a very simple boy. His mother was a maidservant. But because he associated with some Mahabhagwats and heard from them and took the remnants of their food, then he developed great determination and great saintly qualities, he perfected himself. And I'm sorry? Yes? Good, another good example. You had one, Mataji? Right. And because he followed his guru's order, then he got a very deep understanding of Srimad Bhagavad Gita by following his order. By associating with a spiritual master, then even a foolish person, as we say that prayer, Mukam Karoti Vachalam, Pangum Longayate Girim, Yatkripatama Ambande, Sri Gurum Dina Taranam, that by the mercy of the spiritual master, one who is dumb, right, one who cannot speak, he can actually recite eloquent poetry. Or one who cannot see, one who is blind, he can see the stars in the sky. And one who is lame, means he cannot walk, if he gets the mercy of Guru, then he can climb mountains. So by that association, one can actually change his whole character. Actually, in the Jyoti Shastra, in the scriptures which explain about astrology, Vedic astrology, therein it said, I think it's Parasara Muni, he says that three things mold the character and destiny of a person. And one of them is the karma, or the caste of the parents. If the parents are brahmanas, then the child, that influences the son. Or if they're kshatriyas, that influences the son. That has influence on his character. It means their own nature influences the son. That's one influence. The other influence is the planetary influence at the time of birth. Each planet actually is a person, and they have different characteristics. And if a certain Jupiter is Brihaspati, Jupiter has characteristics like integrity, justice, and so on. So if Jupiter is very prominent when a child is born, then he has those qualities in greater proportion. So that's the second influence, the planetary influence, and the third influence is the association that the person has. And Parasara Muni explains that of those three influences, the asanga, the association, is the most influential, most powerful. That even if one's parents are of another nature, even if the planetary influence is of a certain combination, if that person takes association, where the association that he takes will have a greater influence on molding his character. So association or sangha is extremely important. That's why Rupa Goswami, and his Nectar of Instruction, in the second and third verse, he repeats this instruction. He says that one of the things one should do, of the six things that should be done, one of them is he should associate with saintly persons. And one of the six things that should not be done is that one of the six faults are associating with worldly-minded persons, and the six good qualities are that he gives up association with worldly-minded persons, right? So it's like a double bind. It's good to give up association with mundane people, and it's good to take association with saintly people. And then, of course, Lord Chaitanya, one time, he was asked several times, how do you know who is a Vaishnava? How do you know who is a Vaishnava? And one of the ways he defined a Vaishnava is asat sangatyaga, a Vaishnava achara. Achara means behavior. So the behavior of a Vaishnava is that asat sangatyaga. He does not associate with worldly-minded persons. You can know a person is a Vaishnava if he has this characteristic, that he renounces association with asat sangis. So by definition, then, a devotee will avoid association with worldly-minded people. And if he's very fortunate and he gets association with devotee, then it's explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita that he says that when a person comes in contact with a devotee, that is a sign. It's like we have, you go on the highway, you see so many signs. Delhi is this way, so many miles per hour, you can, kilometers per hour you can go. Jaipur is that way. We see so many signs. So when one comes in contact with a devotee, that is a sign that his sojourn in this material world is coming to an end. This is according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, and says that when a devotee comes in contact, when a person comes in contact with a devotee, then it is like he is like a log which is floating down a river and is accidentally washed up upon the bank. Just by chance, the log is washed up upon the bank. In the same way, the jiva who's wandering for many, many births in this material world, when he comes in contact with the devotee, then he can be pulled out of this ocean of material distress and saved. So it is not a small thing when one comes in contact with a devotee. And so when one does have the great fortune to come in contact with a devotee, then he should be very diligent to take association. And we know, how do you associate, right? You associate differently with different people. Like if a devotee is superior to you, older than you, and actually more advanced than you, then we should serve that devotee and take instruction from him. If a devotee is of an equal level with you, then what do you do? How do you associate? You reveal your mind and confidence. You make friends with that devotee. And if a devotee's less younger than you or less advanced than you, then you exploit him like anything. Right? Right? No. No. No, you're merciful to him. You're merciful to him. All right. So now, yes, Prabhu, Janmasthami.
I've heard Prabhupada said that 90% of our advancement comes about through association.
Are
you familiar with that quote?
I've heard that. I'm not, but... It's obviously has, you know, I mean, it seems like it's backed by Shastra, right? I can search and see when and where Srila Prabhupada said that, if in fact he said that. But I've always heard that. I've always heard that.
I remember one time that Satsyaprashtha, I heard the tapes, I wasn't here, but he gave a class on Prabhupada appreciation. And one of the classes was everything that everyone thinks that Prabhupada said but didn't say.
Oh, really? That should be interesting.
Yeah, like 50% of my work is done in regard to Varnashram. You know, that was what was remaining. And no one
could find substantiate that.
There was no exact time when he said that quote. It seemed like he had
an impact. Well, that, many things get like that. You know, the one I was thinking of just more recently, because I'm not trying to point the finger at anyone, but sometimes what we heard Prabhupada said is repeated, and for no ill intent, sometimes it gets changed. And the one that struck me the most recently was the sign we have in the temple room. Whereas I always, at least, you tell me what you remember, but I remember when Srila Prabhupada left the planet, I heard that he said, "My love, your love for me will be tested. Or will your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate together." That's what I heard. That's what I remember. You also? And now they've put another, or at least now maybe I'm wrong, but it seems that now it says something different. Now there's another twist on it. So it would be good to find out exactly what he did say.
There was a collection of these sayings, you know, or things that Prabhupada said in the final days I always thought it was what you said was the shortened version, but then that's where I saw it for the first time in
a book that had Prabhupada's last instructions in it.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting because I looked in the database and there's no. Of course, there's many things Srila Prabhupada did say that's not in the folio database. So that doesn't mean that he didn't say it. We all know he said something like that, but I never heard it in this particular format.
No, I heard that one way back in the 80s. I'm not sure when that book was published. It's printed in pictures of Prabhupada and books.
What's the difference between the meaning which is written in the...
Anyway, that's another discussion, but The point is, we want to repeat what he actually said. And if it's changed in any way, then it may be changed for some purpose, or it may just be some innocent mistake. But in any case, we want to repeat exactly what was said. And how it changes, that's like another subject. You had something to say, Mother?
Well, I had conversation about this sort of thing was Gary Rush coming, and I was bringing up one particular thing, and he said, I know what you mean, and he gave his own example. He said, in Prabhupada's last days, he repeatedly said, don't try to change anything, just maintain what I have given you. Uh-huh. And he said it again, and I just stared at him, because I know how I heard it, and how most devotees in the West at least heard it. If you can't increase,
at least maintain.
There's a huge difference.
Yeah.
It's a different mode of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So we have to be very chaste to our spiritual master. We have to, all of us have the thing is, we always want to think, well, it's the leader's responsibility. But actually, all of us, each individual person has the responsibility to be very chaste to a spiritual master. And Prabhupada actually writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita that it is our duty. Anyway, we have that. We should all accept the responsibility to make sure that Srila Prabhupada's teachings are preserved properly. So then, and in order to do this, we require good association. So next text. One's intelligence becomes degraded in the association of low-class people. It remains the same in the association of equals and is improved in the association of superiors. This is very interesting. Sometimes we have a tendency to associate or to only associate with those with subordinates. Sometimes it's easier to associate with subordinates because why? Because we can boss them around and they won't tell us what to do. We generally want to resist having to do what others say, at least some of us. And so we pick association with those who are less advanced than us or younger than us, or subordinate to us. And thus we feel very comfortable. But here it's explained, if we only associate with those who are less than us or low-class people, then our own status will deteriorate. We'll become like them. So it's one who's aspiring to make progress in spiritual life. This is not a desirable thing. And if we associate with equals, then we remain equal. We'll remain on this. We'll not so much. We won't get degraded. We won't become degraded, and we won't grow so much. But if we associate with those who are more advanced, more elevated than us, then we grow very quickly. So even though it's an austerity to associate, I mean, in one sense, at least it's an austerity for the mind, an austerity for our false ego, to associate with those who are more advanced, still we should understand from this verse that it's very beneficial. And we should try our best to associate by serving, by hearing, by presenting inquiry. And this way we can progress very quickly in spiritual life. That's one thing also in our Gurukula is that the children, they get a lot of association with adults. At least in our Gurukul, the kids practically at all times they have some adult supervision, or they should. At least, that's the program. They should have a lot of supervised activity, supervised by adults, so that they. I've seen that some of the boys that have grown up by having a lot of association with adults, they actually mature much more quickly because of that association. So a person's mind is like a mirror as it reflects objects lying in its proximity. The difference is that the mirror does not acquire the qualities of the objects it reflects, but the mind does. The mind contemplates the objects it perceives and gets colored by them. If the mind associates with an object for an extended time, it takes on the characteristics of that particular object or person. Therefore, it is said that a man is known by the company he keeps. And then there's a verse quoted from Mahabharata. One is influenced by the company be it a saint's company, a wicked man's company, an ascetic, or a thief. A man is like a cloth which absorbs the dye it is soaked in. So this means we want to then, of course, be in association with those persons who will benefit from. Dwivida was a devotee of Lord Ram, who fought against Ravana's army. But he developed demoniac qualities owing to the association of Narakasur. So at one point he was fighting on the side of Lord Ram, so he was devoted to Lord Ram, and he was risking his life for Ravana. But then he fell into the association of Narakasura and became demoniac. And then we hear how he behaved one time with Lord Balaram. He behaved in a very ill way with Lord Balaram because of this bad association. He developed demoniac qualities, and Lord Balaram killed him. And in contrast, you know, this shows what bad association. One can even be a devotee of Krishna, but because of bad association, he can fall out. And similarly, the example on the positive side is Narada Muni, who was the son of a maidservant, but became a great sage owing to holy association. So after hearing the king's speech, a great scholar named Vishnu Sharma, who was completely versed in Niti Shastra, spoke like Brihaspati. O king, these princes are born of an exalted race, therefore they are capable of learning Niti Shastra from me, because, text 42, attempts to train unfit persons can never be fruitful, just as by hundreds of attempts one cannot teach a crane to speak like a parrot. So now, here, it is important to assess the ability and interest of the students and educate them according to their nature, as it is easier to sail with the wind than against it. This means the teacher has to study the nature of the student. He has to see, is the boy very much influenced by the mode of ignorance? Is a student very much influenced by the mode of passion, or is he very much influenced by goodness? If it's determined that he's very much influenced by goodness, then he will be naturally more inclined towards certain types of activity. Brahminical activity means he will like to study. He will be better behaved. He will like cleanliness. He will like deity service. He will have a different inclination. If he's influenced by passion, he will have another inclination. And so the teacher must take note of this and then educate him accordingly. If we see a student is always sleeping in the class and uninterested in the subject matter, then it won't help to give that student some very tedious assignment. He won't be able to do it. And we say, okay, now you do some research and you write a term paper to a person who's not interested or can't even stay awake. Obviously, that will not help him and will frustrate the teacher and will actually make the student feel inferior, that I'll never succeed in school. School is too hard. But if we actually find out, okay, he's not so much interested in scholastic achievement, but let's see, does he have a good service attitude? If so, okay, then teach him some trade, teach him something according to his nature, and this way he'll learn. Like in a gurukul, sometimes the boys who are very brahminical, then of course they would teach them Sanskrit and give them so much rigorous study programs. Those that were not, okay, they would help take care of the cows, collect wood, beg for grains or something. They would be given some duty to perform, which they could easily accomplish, and they would feel successful at doing, and gradually they would develop their ability. So therefore, if you get a student here, it's explained that if you try to teach a crane to speak like a parrot, no matter how much you try to do it, he won't be able to do it, because he doesn't have the faculty to do it. That is the talent of a parrot. It is easier for the teacher and healthier for the student to be trained in consonance with his nature. Each of us is not fit for every type of knowledge. A crane has no ability to imitate the sound it hears. This is the talent of a parrot. If one tries to teach a crane to do so, no doubt his attempt will meet with failure. Training should be done in accordance with one's ability. At present, many educational institutes have entrance examinations to determine the particular ability of the applicants. I also remember when I was in the university, I went only because my parents forced me. I had no interest in study when I was a young man. But so I just by force, because when you enroll in the university, you have to select some kind of a major, they call it. You have to select a major topic you want to study. So I just said, anyway, just put anything down there. I don't care. And so I took a bunch of different courses. And then at one point, I started to get more serious. And I started to think, well, I better, you know, I'm spending so much time here. I'm trying to at least pass the courses so that I'm not embarrassed in front of my family. But, you know, I might as well try. And at one point, I just got a little serious, and I thought, well, I have to at least, I might, if I'm going to be doing all this, I might as well be learning something I want to learn. But I really had no idea. So I went to the dean of our school, and I said, well, I my problem is I don't really know what I want to study. I'm not interested in any of this stuff. And he said, well, we can give you a vocational aptitude test. It means you just take a test which asks you a series of different questions, which actually pertain to your character, your interests, your hobbies, this kind of thing. Not that it didn't have any questions about academics, but just what do you like, what don't you like, this and that. And so I remember taking that exam, and then they told me that you should study journalism, which is actually something I was interested in. So even materialists, they have developed exams like this to help the student find out, or to help determine what is the student's nature, and then educate them according to that nature. So even the materialists understand this principle. What to speak of spiritualists? This should be very obvious to us, because a man is forced to act according to the modes of material nature. We know from Bhagavad Gita that all men are forced to act helplessly according to the modes of material nature. So if one has a brahminical nature, if we give him a service that is not consistent with his nature, then he'll not be satisfied, and he will not progress, and he'll not progress nicely. And if we give, you know, if a person has got a lower nature, and we give him a service which is more brahminical, he will not succeed in performing, in executing that service, nor will he feel satisfied, nor will he feel inspiration to actually. He'll feel I'm a failure, and then he'll say, or I've seen in the minds of children, I've seen, I don't like this school. I don't like this school. Well, why don't you like it? Well, they can't express why, but it's because their nature has not been understood, and the teachers, well, if a teacher is expert, then he will engage a student according to his nature, and he will feel success. And he will be successful and learn according to his capacity. Yes, Prabhu.
We've been studying in colleges in America, and you see so much frustration that after the first, the second, sometimes after the third year, they haven't chosen a major. A lot of students express a lot of frustration to us that I'm here and I have to do it to get a good job. But I'm totally uninterested in what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing it for. We see a lot. Because there's a total mismatch between the shooter population.
That's also because in Kali Yuga, our natures are all mixed. Also, our natures are mixed up. But in any case, you're right that in any case, because of this, then the teacher should take the responsibility to try to figure out what is the nature of the student and engage him accordingly. That will at least help. But you're right, and we see, not only in universities, but in public schools all over the world, or at least in the Western world, the students are so frustrated that this frustration comes out as aggression, as destruction. They destroy their schools, they light their lockers on fire, they assault their teachers, because they're frustrated. They're not actually engaged properly.
At university, we see every day, you know, after school, they all claim to have no money to purchase books, and then we see the same people going to the store and buy 6 packs for every day.
Yeah. They're frustrated. Yes, Prabhu. Prabhu was pointing out how the students also sense that the teachers don't care about them. And that, of course, adds to their frustration. So, well, this is very true. And therefore, we should try to not follow that example in our schools. Or, of course, this is a school in our relationships with devotees. Then we should try to be more personal, not treat each other well, without taking into consideration one's wants, one's desires, one's needs. Mother Saranagati?
The terms of the religion are produced by the predisposition of character, but they were marked down mostly because people confuse equal with same.
I'm sorry? They confuse equality? It's interesting, huh? They say it's discrimination. Well, this is a misunderstanding, right? They're thinking, actually, it's just a trick of Kali Yuga to make things a worser mess than they already are. They put unqualified students in the class, and all they do is create a disturbance so that the qualified students cannot concentrate. That's actually what happens. Yeah. So we should not make the same mistakes in our education, or educating our devotees. The ability of the student in spiritual life is measured in two ways: his capacity to understand the subject matter and ability to make proper use of it. If a teacher suspects that a student will misuse what he is teaching, he should not educate him in that subject. Ashwatthama was not qualified to learn the art of throwing brahmastra, as he could not control his anger. Dronacharya made the mistake of teaching him, and the result was that the Pandavas were disgraced. Spiritual knowledge becomes degraded when it is given to unqualified students. Knowledge is power, and more so is the spiritual knowledge. More so is spiritual knowledge. An unqualified person will definitely misuse spiritual knowledge. It's not that the knowledge becomes degraded, but the use of it is degraded. So therefore, as this of course is repeated, rather was expressed in the beginning, that that character is what is taught in Vedic education. And if a student has bad character, then he's not educated very much. He's taught something, but not spiritual knowledge so much, or not something which he can just use to exploit others with. So now, text 43, useless and unfit sons do not take birth in this royal dynasty, just as glass is not produced in the mine of Padmarag topaz. So Vishnu Sharma is saying that because these sons were born in a king's family, they must have some good qualities. They must have some ability to learn. Therefore, I'll take up the challenge to teach them. Therefore, within 6 months, I will make your sons proficient in Niti Shastra. The king again spoke humbly. Text 44. A worm and a flower can attain the heads of saints, and a piece of stone can become divine if installed by devotees. It is unlikely that a worm could reach the head of a great man, but if he is nestled within a flower that is on a garland, of a great person, then he can achieve that, which otherwise would be impossible. Similarly, by good association, even a low-class person can attain rare heights. Marble that is generally used for flooring can be carved into a deity and installed by a great devotee and thus worshipped as God. Actually, the marble acquires godliness on the strength of the devotee. In this and the following two verses, the king glorifies the virtues of good association. He praises Vishnu Sharma, who has kindly volunteered to take charge of his sons. This will encourage him to put his heart into teaching the princes. Saintly people become enthusiastic and dutiful when properly eulogized. On the other hand, low-class people become proud. So, this point about offering praise should be understood. Sometimes we, in order to want to get something from another person, then we flatter them. And this is not good, to flatter someone in order to manipulate. So it's a manipulation technique. But here it's explained that actually if a person is saintly, then he should be offered some kind words. And that will actually inspire him to perform his duty diligently and give blessings. But at the same time, it should be done sincerely. And if a person is actually materially motivated or not very advanced, when he hears praise, that will have an ill effect. It will have a bad effect on him. He will become proud. Yes, Krishna Das Prabhu. Yeah, is my friend. In other words, this must be a reference to just some flattery to try to manipulate him. Or also he is, of course, very strict sannyasi, very strict person, and he understands how hearing oneself praised is actually an allurement by Maya. The false ego likes very much to be praised. So this is how he wanted to. Was not very much fond of people offering him praise. Obviously, was not in the least bit fond of people offering him praise. So therefore, we should not offer him praise. To his face, we can praise him when in his absence. Of course, because he's a very great Vaishnava. And it's interesting, this is a nice point you brought out about how criticism, if people criticize me, they're my friend. We tend to think the opposite. We tend to think that those who praise me, they're my friends, and those who criticize me, they're my enemies. I think there's a... Dhruva Maharaj explains this principle also in the fourth canto. But actually, a real friend is one who will speak the truth. Even we may have a defect, and we may think, well, I don't want to point out that defect because then the person may get upset with me. And it takes great courage to actually go to someone and say, look, you do have this defect. And of course, a friend will do that. A friend who values the relationship, then he will go to a person and say, not for the purpose of belittling the person, but for the with the intent of actually helping the person, then he will go and criticize. Criticize, you know, criticism has several definitions. And generally, in our society, we only give it the negative connotation. We when we hear the word criticized, oh, he's criticizing authority, or he's criticizing me, or he's criticizing someone, we always think of the most negative definition. But actually, in academic fields, or even in you look in a good dictionary, you'll see that there's many definitions of criticism. And one is just to actually examine something on its own merit. Examine something with the intent of evaluating its merit. And so in that way, we have people write critiques on books. They say, when they read a book, and literary critiques, and they'll write a critique on the book saying, these are the good things about the book, this is where the book falls short. It's subjecting something to scrutiny. that is another meaning of criticism. So it is not bad. It is something that is very much needed, actually. Criticism is actually very healthy. In the business world, they pay people. They hire like a consultant. You come in and tell me everything that's wrong with my business. And they even pay people to actually do a critique on their business so that they can correct the mistakes and their business will improve. So if someone offers some constructive criticism, then that we should understand is the activity or the gesture of a friend. If his intent is to actually help improve. But again, as Krishnadas Prabhu is pointing out, flattery, if the flattery or if the praise will infect one's false ego, then that person who praises him is considered an enemy because he's adding fuel to his false ego. Yes? Yeah, they won't like it. They won't like it. Srila Prabhupada, also there was one place where, I think it was, I don't know exactly where it was, but one disciple started glorifying Srila Prabhupada because it's the duty of the disciple when he sees the spiritual master, he should offer some praise. But this devotee was overdoing it. And he was saying, oh, my dear Srila Prabhupada, you are this, you are that, you are this, you are that. And Prabhupada said, stop! I know what I am. So, was it Vishal, right? Yeah. Because Vishal used to go through a whole thing. He would like narrate the many prayers of glorification. And it was done, Prabhupada liked him, but at the same time, it was always like overdone. It was like, it was a little artificial, it seemed, sometimes. So Prabhupada says, stop, I know what I am. So, yes, Mother Narayani?
Mother Jaipuri also, when he got to hear Gopinath, the first thing he did was leave the place so nobody would get to praise him.
He knew, Madhavendra Puri is a great example, he knew that when people hear that the deity stole from me, they're all going to want to come and see me and touch my feet and get my blessings. So he packed up and left and ran away to avoid being praised. Mother Bhagavati.
But I didn't have to Saraswati. So he said this thing, but also in that essay, Humbler Than a Blade of Grass, he made himself appear to be, like an arrogant fool sitting on his big seat asking people, sing jai to me. He said, but I have to do this because I went to Mahaprabhu. No one else would condescend to instruct me. So I took my case to the Lord himself and he said, by my command, be guru. So you know, he has to instruct to praise.
Yes. He has to accept praise from his disciples. But again, the warning is, he should not try to indulge in it. He should not enjoy it. He may have to accept it. Just like we have to do so many things we don't like, you know, out of duty. So we do them. But we don't try to develop hatred or attachment to these things. So one may have, one has to accept service. One has to accept charity sometimes. He may not like it, but he has to accept service for the benefit of those who are rendering the service. At least the spiritual master or teacher may have to. But he should not now become dependent on it or try to indulge in it or now expect that. The worst thing is now I'm getting so much service and now when I don't get it, I feel disturbed. I feel like I'm being neglected if I don't get it. One becomes accustomed to that. Yes?
Right.
This is a verse in Hitopadesh. And Prabhupada also, you heard that from Srila Prabhupada's books, I think, or his lectures. He says, better to have a staunch enemy. One place I heard him say, yeah, better to have a staunch enemy than a fool for a friend. Because a fool for a friend will cause more damage. So anything else? So we've run out of time. Yes, Mahamudra. That's a good point. Your intention, the intention of the if the person is criticizing, if his intent is to help, then it will not be taken badly.